Sidewinder, Lee Morgan. When you hear Sidewinder, Lee Morgan, you know you're listening to the Taylor Report, CIUT in 9.5 FM. And our next guest is going to be Keith Bolander, who has written two very important books, Voices from the Other Side and Cuba Under Siege. And he has an article in ProgressoWeekly.us titled Trump's New Cuba Policy. We're back in 1987. Are you there, Keith?
Yes, I am, Phil.
Gee, Keith, it's great to talk to you. By the way, you have been recently in Cuba, haven't you?
Yeah, I was there about a month ago.
Uh-huh. So now, well, you're the perfect man to assess it. And your article says in 1987. What was 1987?
Well, I just use it as a comment on what Trump said really deserves to be 30 years old. It was just incredible, the things he was saying during the speech in Miami where he announced his new Cuban policy. It was right out of the worst times of the Cold War and the height of the hostility between Cuba and the United States. And I really, I thought, and so did everyone else, thought we were past that now.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it is interesting. He did during the campaign. He was going to change all kinds of things. He was saying he was not. He didn't favor what Obama. And by the way, Obama's decision was basically as he's exiting office in what was it, October 2016, that he had this statement about what he's going to do toward normalization. Your article stresses there's some misapprehensions. How far Obama had actually gone since there's still a blockade. And then it, in the case of Trump, maybe he hasn't gone as far as people hearing the word terminate would think. Can you discuss that?
It's just to step back just a bit. Trump, as he's done with so many other subjects, he's flip-flopped on Cuba. He at one point said that it was time for the opening, that he supported Obama's move to normalization. And it was time to put the past aside. Well, then he got in front of a Cuban-American right-wing audience and said no, he was going to turn back everything that Obama had opened. And so everyone was expecting a lot worse. He could have turned back everything, but in fact, he only focused in on two aspects, the easing of the travel restrictions and prohibiting American businesses from doing any negotiations with the Cuban military Gaviota. The rest he left untouched. Mm-hmm. So the embassies are still there in Washington and in Havana. The cruise lines are still coming into Cuba. The American Airlines are still flying into Cuba. Cuba is still off the list of states that sponsor terrorism. He maintained the elimination of the wet foot, dry foot policy. So, you know, 99%.
By the way, Keith, I hate to interrupt you, but I've got to ask you to tell everybody what the wet foot, dry foot. That's a great term.
Well, that was the...
it may be ugly, but it's got to hear about this.
That was the program that allowed Cubans, once they stepped foot on American soil, to take advantage of all the benefits of the Cuban Adjustment Act. So that was one of the greatest impetuses towards Cubans coming into the United States on rafts and through human smuggling. So once a Cuban set foot on American soil, he could take advantage of the Cuban Adjustment Act, which gave him fast track to citizenship. If he was picked up on the seas, he was returned back to Cuba. So Obama eliminated that last a year and a half ago, and it immediately had an effect. There's no more Cuban rafters coming to the United States. So there was some concern that Trump would reestablish that for propaganda purposes, but he didn't. So the wet foot, dry foot policy is still being eliminated. And so there was a lot of things that Trump could have done more than he did, but what he did to is going to have an effect. I've written an article in regards to what he did on the travel restrictions. Obama, one of the best things Obama did was to permit individual Americans to travel to Cuba under a general license. So all they had to do was they could book their own airfare, they could book their own hotels, They could basically set their own itinerary.
He gave freedom to Americans.
Absolutely, absolutely.
That's
he gave
shocking.
Freedom to individual Americans. That's the emphasis. So when I was in Cuba, I met a lot of Americans just doing their own thing in Cuba.
They're good at that.
Yeah, and they were having a good time, and we were able to talk about the reality of Cuba. But Trump eliminated that. So now an American can still go to Cuba under the 12 licensing permissions for cultural exchanges, for sports exchanges, for all sorts of things, but they have to do it under a tour operator.
And by the way, is that a monopoly of some sort?
Well, there's only a number of tour operators in the United
States.
Somebody
might be making a dollar out of this
idea. And that's the point. Going under a tour operator is extremely expensive compared to what you could do individually. Hmm. And the other thing with the tour operators is it is highly itinerized. So you have to prove that you're meeting with Cuban officials and you're doing all these things under the guidelines, that you're not sneaking off to the beach or anything. So it's going to really make a deterrent on Americans coming to Cuba. The elimination of the individual option is really going to have a negative effect.
So, by the way, this is a continuation. This goes all the way back to the original problem with Fidel, is that the U.S., with its own population, has wanted to control the narrative about Cuba. They did not want Americans with their own opinions.
That's a really important point, and I think that's why Trump, well, not Trump, but his Cuban-American hard-right supporters like Marco Rubio and Mario Diaz-Balart, they focused in on that because for decades, the anti-revolutionary Cuban-Americans in Miami have controlled the message. So they've said all these terrible, horrible things about Cuba, basically just lies. And the Americans couldn't challenge it on it because they weren't allowed to go to Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
So then when Obama eased the travel restrictions, again, really focusing on the individual, the Americans were coming to Cuba in the thousands. There was almost 200,000 Americans come to Cuba last year, and they were seeing Cuba on its own, and they were making their own opinion, and they could judge and see that so much of the anti-Cuban propaganda was just nothing but lies, and that means that the hard-right Cuban Americans were losing influence, were losing the message, and were losing the propaganda war, and I think that's why they convinced Trump to end that part of the travel restrictions, to turn it back to the tour operators so that individual Americans can't go to Cuba anymore.
Yeah. We're speaking to Keith Bolander. He has written Voices from the Other Side and Cuba Under Siege, and he has this article in ProgressoWeekly.us, titled Trump's New Cuba Policy. We're back in 1987. You're going to have another article, I believe you were telling us, soon about, also in Progresso Weekly, right?
Yes, hopefully this week.
Yeah. Now, he said, he pushed all the buttons. He said Cuba has to release political prisoners. But I think you point out, and others have, what political prisoners is he talking about?
Yeah, he didn't name any.
Yeah. Well, you know, when one country talks to another, very often the second country has an opinion toward the first. I noticed the Cubans' reaction, they listed, rarely do we hear this, but the Cubans said, well, if you want to start talking about social issues within our sovereign borders and your sovereign, we're very concerned about the treatment of black Americans. We're very concerned about poverty. We're absence of health care and your foreign wars. That is turning into a kind of an interesting debate if people will follow.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny. A lot of the Americans I spoke to when I was in Havana pointed that out. They said, well, how can the Cubans have universal health care? And they have free education. We don't even have that in the United States.
We can't afford it. We're the richest country in the world.
Exactly. So the hypocrisy is just, it's a different standard when it comes to Cuba. And that Trump really showed that in the speech. He was making all those demands, like you said, the Cubans have to change their system politically. They have to change their system economically. They have to release all these political prisoners. They have to do all of this. And then in the next breath, Trump says, but we have to respect Cuban sovereignty.
As somebody, I guess, they didn't have time to explain to him what the word means.
Well, no one no one in the room giggled because they all believed the same thing. It was a group of the Cuban Americans, the hard right, that just are absolutely opposed to any sort of engagement with Cuba.
Now, when you mentioned Americans being able to go to Cuba and see with their own eyes, people-to-people sort of situation, that, of course, involved Miami Cubans who are really getting kind of fed up with the hard right. I mean, we are able to now say there's a group around people like Mario Rubio, little Mario, as Trump calls him, or sweaty Mario, if he, but there's a large number of Miami or Florida Cubans who don't like their leadership and what they're calling for. Is that right?
Yeah, very much so. The polls of the last number of years have indicated the vast majority of Cuban Americans want normal relations with Cuba, want the ability to go back and forth to Cuba without any restrictions. Now, Trump didn't touch that. Politically, he couldn't. So Cuban Americans can travel back and forth without any restrictions, without any licensing requirements, with nothing.
So that headache for the Miami guys will go on.
Absolutely.
This is really very interesting. We have an ethnic division here with non-Florida Americans or non-Cuban Americans. They don't get to go, but the others can go because of some, I suppose it must be somewhat financial or personal? Or?
Well, there were restrictions under previous administrations, most notably Bush, who prohibited Cuban Americans from traveling back to Cuba once every 3 years. But then Obama, in his first term, eliminated that and allowed Cuban Americans to go back and forth to Cuba without any restrictions. And they've you know, brought back financial support, goods and food and clothing. So that's become the norm for the last number of years. And, you know, even Trump wouldn't touch that change because it would cause considerable reaction within the Cuban American community. But the other point is that the Cuban American community supports any American, if he wants to go to Cuba, supports the end of the embargo in the majority and supports the end of all travel restrictions. It's just this still very narrow group of the hard right Cuban Americans led by the Republican Marco Rubio, Mario Diaz-Balart, Ileana Ross Lettin, and that are still controlling Cuban policy. And that's why Obama's opening threatened them so much. They were very afraid that they were losing that policy.
To some extent, this is also a U.S. domestic political division for controlling votes or supporters. And my memory is one of the books on Cuba recently, title won't come to me, but the author said that Ronald Reagan had created and urged the formation of Republican groups amongst the Cubans. And they were using the language of we're going to do something about Fidel, but it was also understood to be a political arrangement with the Republican Party. So in a sense that they were financing their anti-Cuba stuff was being used to build the Republican Party in Florida.
Yeah, the best example of that is the Cuban American National Foundation, which was established under Reagan. It became an organization that attracted a great deal of donations from the Cuban American community, and again, we're going back 30 years in that time, and those donations, in the most part, were given to Republican politicians in Florida. So you're absolutely correct. Reagan created an organization that helped support the continuation of the Cuban, the anti-revolutionary policy against Cuba. But we've come a long way
from
that.
The understanding was that they could commit terror against Cuba, and they would look the other way.
That's very much that. The terrorism even goes back to the 1960s.
It's a real study in corruption, masquerading as cause and independence and democracy. But it's a lot of it just people lining their pockets along with in the process.
Well, and that's still a huge influence in the anti-Cuban policy that remains today, because the industry is still making a lot of money for fewer and fewer supporters of the embargo. Again, the Republican Cuban American congressmen get a tremendous amount of financial support from the Cuban-American community that still supports the embargo. So the industry, the money-making industry of the anti-Cuban strategy is still very much alive in Cuba, and that's being threatened too. So that's why you see this reaction trying to turn back the clock, but it didn't work. And if the anti-embargo influence was as strong as it was 30 years ago, Trump would have eliminated everything, but he didn't. So to me, it's an indication that those who are supporting the normalization process, those who support Obama's overtures, and a lot of American businesses do, they're winning.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, that I like, by the way, I really urge people to read this article. It's in progressoweekly.us and Trump's new Cuba policy. We're back in 1987. That's what I really took away from it, was that Cuba is so much stronger now. And also the reality, the international stage is shifting, and there's a lot more players, and more, some of them have a lot more clout than they used to have. Actually, the darkest days were when, with the collapse of the Soviet Union, the U.S. was pretty much going around the world telling everybody, sign here or you're done for. And that period has passed. And Cuba weathered it just through miraculous effort on their part. And I guess if you also have to credit, they had a leader in whom they had total confidence, Fidel Castro.
Very much so, yeah. And you look at the international situation, the only country that's isolated in its relationship with Cuba is the United States. The rest of the world has normal relations with Cuba.
Yeah. Don't they every year have a resolution, say, stop, end that blockade at the United Nations, and the U.S. ignores it?
Yeah, well, last year, when President Obama in his last year, it was the first time the Americans abstained from voting in favor of the continuation of the embargo. Now, Trump has already indicated this year when it comes up for a vote, I think it's in October, that the Americans are going to vote against the resolution to end the embargo. So we are, in so many ways, we're turning back the clock. But
I can't leave the bottle alone.
Yeah, I don't think it's a minor setback. The forces to normalize relations, even in Congress now, are getting stronger and stronger.
Mm-hmm. This is Keith Bolander. And Keith, I suppose I should ask you, about the economy or about his list of reasons, this not trading with the armed forces business, that's probably a new term for many people. What is that phenomenon that he doesn't want to have any trucker trade with?
Well, a division of the armed forces in Cuba is called Gaviota, and they have management and control of a lot of tourist properties, hotels, and restaurants in Cuba. So Trump is his other turn back on the Cuban policy was prohibiting American businessmen or individuals from conducting any financial negotiations with this military entity. Although the hypocrisy in that is ridiculous too, because there is an American company that is managing a hotel in Havana under the joint partnership with Gaviota. So what Trump has done, he is now prohibiting Americans who are coming to Cuba to go and stay at the only American-run property in Cuba.
Yeah. Well, now, by the way, does that entity speak up, or do they do things quietly? Do they hire a lobbyist to go say, "Do you realize what you just did?" Or do they issue statements about, you know, this is not the way to do business?
The Cuban government has issued a statement objecting to Trump's policy changes. The specific military entity, Gaviota, I don't believe has. But I'm sure there's all sorts of under-the-table negotiations, because there's dozens of American companies right now trying to close business in Cuba, and they're dealing with the company, the Gaviota. So it'll be interesting to see in the next few months if there may be some adjustments or there may be some changes to what even Trump is trying to do.
Mm-hmm. You were, of course, you mentioned just there, and I've been reading reports that Cuba is looking good, that there seem to be there's optimism and there's some changes in the economy that seem to have been a tonic. Is that accurate, or how did you find Cuba at the moment?
Yeah, as I said, I was in Havana, and there seemed to be so much more activity, a lot of private taxi cars on the road, a lot of new private restaurants opening up, and more importantly, you know, Airbnb is in Cuba, and they're doing really good business. So there's a lot of private residences that are opening up to basically the American tourists to stay at their hotels, stay at their private homes, and eat at their private restaurants. So there has been a real economic upturn in Havana as a result of the increase in Americans coming to Cuba, and Havana specifically. Now, I'm sure there's a lot of concern that these Cubans that are operating private businesses and benefiting from increased American tourism, they're going to be suffering once these new regulations take effect.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Keith Bolitner, and Keith, I guess I have to ask you, with the Trump administration, which seems somewhat unstable within the U.S., there's talk that he might be impeached and all this. At this very same time, the American policies in the region are becoming noticeably aggressive. They supported enthusiastically the removal of the president of Brazil, which they didn't call a coup, but it certainly looked at all the necessary elements. They seem to be working zealously toward the removal, if they can do it, of the government of Mr. Maduro. What is Cuba saying about that? And because the Venezuelans are getting terrible press here. There's just not a word uttered, Globe and Mail, Toronto Star, that is anything but condemnatory of Venezuela. What is the Cuban assessment of that situation?
Well, and that's a reflection of the new international reality. There's tremendous strength and support within all of Latin America for Cuba and against what the Trump administration is trying to accomplish in countries like you just mentioned, Venezuela and Brazil, and what they're doing to Cuba. The Cuban attitude is, well, you know, stay calm and carry on. We've seen it before. Mm-hmm. For the last 60 years, we've had ups and downs with American presidents, and we hope that the normalization process will continue. But they're gonna carry on with what they've been doing. Their relationships with the rest of the world are strong as ever. Mm-hmm. And it's just unfortunate that, again, America, which has often been on a step when it comes to Cuba, is reverting back to these policies that just no longer should be in effect. It's just a shame.
Yeah, and I just realized I'm always saying the last question, but that was a trick. I actually have one more last question. It's I saw at unacuba.org their statement of the Cuban government, and on this they made the point that the blockade was instituted in 1962. Obama really won a lot of praise for saying, let's have normalization. But in the unacubastatement.org today, the government said, of course, the blockade was not lifted. What is the blockade? What does it consist of? And is that the very core of it?
Yeah, that's a good point to remember, because while Obama eased regulations on travel and ease some of the economic regulations against Cuba, the blockade is still firmly in place, and it is in the hands of Congress. Even President Trump cannot eliminate the blockade if he was so inclined. It has to go through a passage of Congress. Now, there is more and more effort and more indication that Congress, including Republicans, are willing to start presenting legislation that will eventually bring an end to the embargo. I think we're still probably the midterms in 2018 will bring it in sharper focus, but there's more and more efforts, thanks to Obama's process of opening up Cuba, where you're seeing congressmen realizing that the embargo has to end, and that normal relations with Cuba is the only sensible policy now.
Yeah. Well, Keith Bolander, the article is in ProgressoWeekly.us. We really appreciate talking to you, and obviously we're going to have to follow it, and we'll be looking forward to talking to you again.
Always a pleasure, Phil.
Okay, thanks a lot, Keith.
Thank you.
CIUT, Taylor Report, 89.5 FM, and I'm going to look now to see whether Ms. Freeland is enthusiastic for the policies.
Phil, can I read you a number? This is from a statement put out by the Cuban government today.
Yes.
And they're addressing Trump's accusations against them on human rights. And the Cuban government says, it should be recalled that Cuba is a state party to 44 international human rights instruments, while the U.S. is only a state party to 18,
yes.
Which means that more than half of the international agreements on human rights that exist in the world today, the U.S. has refused to endorse.
Yes. Well, they were, as you remember, among the last to sign on the Genocide Convention.
Yes.
And they said to each other very clearly, there's two problems. What we did to the Native Americans, somebody might use that against us, and then what was done to Africans, and so the Solid South, which is keeping Trump in power, by the way, they're the ones who didn't want that. And you know, if you read that to him, he'd say, we shouldn't have those 18.
Yes, that's right.
What, can
we get rid of them?
There's nobody tells us anything. The rules are for little people, for the losers, you know. I think that's how it's done. Don't emulate his policies. You will end up in hell. This is the Taylor Report, and we want to thank Carol and Phil and, of course, Spirit of Lee Morgan, always. And we'll see you next week.